saw us coming, so Billy turned the wheel and maneuvered around them. The man was shirtless, wearing nothing but light-colored jeans that were folded open at the fly, as he chugged from a bottle wrapped in a brown paper bag. He flicked us off as we passed. The woman, who was wearing a stained lavender tank top and a pair of cotton underwear, scowled, although I wasn't sure if it was meant for us or the man she was arguing with. When we'd passed by them, I continued to watch out the back window. The man had turned his back on the woman, and that's when she leapt onto him, wrapping her arms and legs around him tightly and screaming in a high-pitched tone that made me grateful the windows were rolled up. The bottle fell from the man's hand and rolled across the street as he stumbled for balance. It was the last I saw of them before we rounded the corner and they disappeared from view. Bo was looking out the window as well, although he seemed unfazed by the couple. It was when we turned that he reached for my hand and squeezed tightly, his little fingernails pressing down hard into the skin of my palm. He leaned against me and snuggled his face into my arm, as if he weren't cutting off my circulation where our hands were joined. He could squeeze as hard as he wanted. I took a deep breath. I wasn't going to pull away. Not then. Not ever. I had silently questioned why Billy was tagging along with us, until we pulled up to our destination, a dimly lit trailer in the back of the park. And it dawned on me that Billy must have been there to keep an eye on Bo, because there was no fucking way he was going to come inside with us. I wasn't ever going to let him back inside that thing. Ever. Preppy hopped out of the van, and I gave Bo's hand a squeeze when the door was rolled open.
"We'll be right back. Stay with Billy, okay?"
Preppy asked, holding out his fist for Bo to bump, which he did. I got out and we rolled the door closed. Billy saluted Preppy as we turned toward the crumbling pile of aluminum in front of us. It looked like a junkyard and smelled like an open sewer. Pizza boxes, eggshells, fast food wrappers with flies buzzing over it littered the small sidewalk to the front steps. The smell of urine burned my nostrils as we approached the door. "Are you ready for this?" I asked Preppy as he took my hand and raised it to his lips to give it a quick kiss.
"Fuck no."
He opened the door without knocking and stepped inside. Bo's mother, for lack of a better term, was named Trish. She didn't stand up when we'd entered, and I wasn't sure if it was because she couldn't or just didn't want to. She was tiny and frail, perched on a tattered recliner with a knitted blanket, with so many holes in it there was no way it served any kind of purpose.
"Hope you two know you'd be the ones getting a bum deal. Kid don't even talk. Might even be a retard," she said, looking from me to Preppy like we were the crazy ones.
I was fuming in a way I'd never felt before. Preppy must have sensed my anger because he reached out and grabbed my arm, like I was going to lunge at her, and I can honestly say that I was definitely thinking about it. I answered her through my teeth.
"Have you ever thought that unlike some people who just run their fucking mouths without a single thought behind their words, that maybe Bo's just waiting for something important to say?"
"Whatever. As long as you know what you're getting into," she said, scratching at the scabs on her arm. A drop of blood bubbled to the surface and trickled down to her wrist, and then into the lines of her palm, but she didn't seem to notice.
"So how much?"
"You want us to buy him from you?" Preppy asked in complete disbelief, although something told me that he wasn't as surprised as his voice led on. "You've got to be fucking kidding me."
It was his turn to be angry. The cords in his neck tightened. He reached into the waistband of his pants and pulled his gun, holding it with two shaky hands as if it were physically hurting him not to pull the trigger. Trish barely flinched when she looked up and saw the silver barrel pointed down at the top of her greasy gray head. He cocked the gun. The click echoed throughout the small room. He stepped forward, glaring hatred down at the ghost of a woman as he pressed the gun to her forehead.
"You give him a shitty fucking life in this open sewer of a home? You starve him, neglect him, and do God knows fucking what to him, and now you want to sell him?"
An evil-sounding laugh escaped him.
Fuck, I've seen some evil shit in my life, but right up there with the likes of my own fucking mother.
And why shouldn't I get paid?
Trish asked, ignoring everything Preppy had said that wasn't in line with what she wanted to hear.
You want something that's mine. In my world, you gotta pay for what you want. Supply and demand.
She lit a cigarette butt with shaky hands and inhaled once before the cherry fell off into her lap. She brushed it off her blanket and it fell to the floor, where she stubbed it out with her dirty bare foot.
You treat him like a fucking nuisance dog. And when we tell you we're gonna take him off your hands for you, all you can respond with is how much?
Preppy licked his lips like he could taste the kill in front of him.
I'll tell you what, you stupid cunt. How about you sign those papers and I pay you by not blowing your motherfucking head off right now?
He seethed. Prep, I said, using the calmest tone of voice I could muster. I knew that Preppy identified with Beau and the way he was raised and neglected, but looking down at this frail woman in the throes of heavy addiction, I couldn't help but think that if things hadn't happened exactly the way they had, I could so easily have ended up just like her. Let me talk to her.
Doc.
Preppy started to argue, but he must have seen the determination written all over my face.
3 minutes. I'll be right outside.
He said, with a look that said he didn't like the idea at all. With one last glare down at Beau's mother, he lowered his gun to his side, but didn't put it away before leaving, slamming the trailer door shut behind him. Trish, right? I asked, taking a step into the living room over a pile of rags. I sidestepped the couch and tried not to let the disgust show on my face as I saw thousands of fleas jumping up from the rug as I maneuvered around the garbage, my ankles under instant attack as they landed bite after bite. I pushed on.
That's right, it's Trisha, but everyone calls me Trish.
Heroin? I asked, pointing to the needle on the side table. Trish looked up at me for the first time, as if she were just noticing I was there.
None of your fucking business. You think that just because you're a stiff, you can come into my fucking home and take my kid for nothing? That you're somehow better than me because you're not depending on a fucking needle to get you through the day?
Trish shook her head and lit the butt of another cigarette from the overflowing ashtray on the side table next to her chair. I stepped closer and knelt down next to her. I pulled up my sleeves and set my forearms across her bony knees. My touch startled her and she sat up, as if I'd stabbed her.
I haven't always been a stiff, I said, using my eyes to point to the scars on the inside of my arms.
I know a lot more about how you're feeling than you think I do. Trish's gaze roamed my scars. Her eyes met mine.
I've been where you are. I know what it's like to have something so small take all the control when it comes to your life.
Trish looked like she was contemplating something. She sat back in her chair and I stood back up, pulling my sleeves back down my arms. She looked at her own arms, then back up at me.
So you think because you used to be a junkie that you can bully me into giving you my kid? Is that it?
I shook my head. No, I think that because you're a junkie, you understand why he'd be better off living somewhere where your addiction isn't what he sees every morning and every night, where heroin use won't be his normal, where the fridge will be full and so will his belly, where his clothes will be clean and he'll go to school every day. But most importantly, where he'll be loved, and that love will be more important than anything. It will come first. I glanced down to the needle and spoon on the table. Before any needle. Trish scoffed.
My love for him comes before.
Don't bullshit me, I interrupted. That comes first, second, third, and only. Trish's shoulders hunched over even more. With a growl, she grabbed a pen off the side of the table and was about to sign her name to the page when Preppy opened the front door and said,
Wait,
he said, throwing me off. I was about to ask him why when he turned and called for Billy, who came in a second later carrying something in his hand. He walked over to Trish without looking around, without saying a word. I think it was the only time I'd ever seen him not smiling. He nodded for Trish to sign, and when she was done, he grabbed the pen from her hand. That's when I realized he was holding a stamp, which he pressed down on the bottom of each page. He initialed a few lines under her signature, and with a nod to Preppy on his way out, he left without saying a single word. I gathered the papers and handed them to Preppy, who was standing by the door.
"You're all right, kid. You know that?"
Trish called out, just as we were about to leave.
"I knew you weren't going to let that one over there kill me."
She flashed me a rotten-toothed smile. "You're right." I turned back around and glared daggers at the reason behind poor Beau's pain. I stared at her with all the hatred I could muster. "Because if you didn't sign the papers and do the right thing by Beau, then I would have killed you myself." Trish had the audacity to laugh.
"So much for understanding a fellow addict," she grumbled. "For a minute I thought you were like me, but you lied. You're just another stiff making threats to get what you want."
I grabbed Preppy's hand and turned back to Trish. "You're confusing understanding for sympathy. I understand what you're going through, but I hated myself when I was going through it, and because of what you've put Beau through, I hate you even more." Preppy helped me down the crumbling steps where Billy was waiting for us, leaning against the van.
"Hang on a sec," Preppy said, heading back up to the door.
He opened it and disappeared inside, reemerging just a few seconds later. "What did you do?" I asked, although I was pretty sure he hadn't killed her, considering I hadn't heard any gunfire.
"She wanted payment for Beau,"
Preppy said with a shrug. He opened the van door and I slid inside next to a sleeping Beau, who was sprawled out across the bench seat, his chest rising and falling in slow rhythm.
"So, I gave it to her."
"You gave her money?" I mouthed, not wanting to wake up Beau. Preppy smiled wickedly with his hands on the roof as he leaned into the van and whispered in my ear.
"Nope. I gave her something she wanted more, and enough of it to almost guarantee she won't ever be a problem for us."
Preppy kissed me on the cheek and slid the door shut, rounding the van. Heroin. He'd given her heroin. Preppy was right. As far gone as Trish was, she wouldn't be able to resist. The chances of her surviving until the morning were slim to... she'd be dead by morning. I waited for the familiar guilt that used to come all the time, even when it had no reason to. At any second, I expected that inner voice of mine to tell me I shouldn't allow Trish to die. Nothing. By the time Preppy popped into the passenger seat and Billy started the van, I couldn't stop the smile from creeping onto my face. As we pulled out of the trailer park, Beau stirred, so I pulled him onto my lap and softly stroked his newly cut hair. I took one last look at the dilapidated trailer as we pulled out onto the road, grateful that Beau would never have to spend another second there, never mind another night. The thing wasn't fit for human habitation, not for Beau, not even for Trish. Beau snored lightly. Preppy leaned back and brushed Beau's hair out of his eyes, and with a loving look in his eyes, he gazed down at his son. Our son. "I could have easily ended up just like her," I whispered, feeling the tears prickling behind my eyes. Relief and happiness filled me with each rotation of the tires that brought us further and further away from that trailer park.
"No, you could never have ended up like her,"
Preppy argued.
"You can't say that. You don't know that."
"You would never have ended up like her," he said again. "Not fucking ever."
"How can you be so sure?"
I flattened my hand over Beau's little cheek, feeling the warmth of his skin against my palm. Preppy covered my hand with his much larger one, intertwining our fingers. I looked up to find his eyes glistening as they stared directly into mine. I felt his determination when he said,
"Because I wouldn't have let you."
Chapter 26. Preppy. "I'm sorry it took me so long to visit," I said as I stood above Grace's grave, feeling my heart smack against my ribcage like it was angry with me for taking it along for the ride it never asked to go on, pounding against my insides to let him the fuck out. "Too fucking late, motherfucker. I didn't know if I'd ever see you again, but this isn't the way it ever went down in my mind." I stuttered a sigh. My throat tightened painfully. I was barely able to swallow. I shoved my hands back into my pockets and pulled them right back out. I kicked at the neatly trimmed grass with my boot and then dropped down to my knees. I leaned forward, resting my hands against a low tombstone that was more like a plaque than an actual stone. I needed to be close to her, or what was left of her. I cringed, willing away the image of Grace as a decaying corpse that kept flashing through my mind. The sun began to set, casting a shadow over the small cemetery. A groundskeeper in coveralls rolled over a small green shade tent. He stopped a few plots down at a spot with no marking and tossed a shovel into the grass. With the toe of his heavy yellow work boot, he clicked the latch at the bottom of each of the four metal posts, locking the wheels in place. When he paused to wipe his sweaty forehead with a rag hanging from his back pocket, he looked over and his eyes met mine. "How you doing today, son?" he asked with a heavy Spanish accent. He shoved the rag back into his pocket and picked up the shovel, stabbing it into the ground. He started scraping off the top layer of grass, dumping it into an awaiting bucket. I glanced down to Grace's plaque, then back up to the groundskeeper. "Not gonna lie, man, I could totally be a whole lot fucking better," I said, my voice shaking with my grief. "Was that your mama?" he asked, gesturing with his chin to the plaque as he turned over another shovelful of grass into the bucket. I nodded. "As close to one as I ever had." He nodded and continued working. "Sorry for your loss. I know it may not help, but death is just a part of life. We all die, some before others. After working here for 30-some-odd years, I can tell you that death is not something to be sad about. It is something to be celebrated." He put a hand to his chest. "In my culture, when a loved one passes, we throw a huge fiesta, and we drink until we can't feel our faces, and then we dance and make love under the stars, and then we drink some more until we can't feel the rest of our bodies. It's about joy. It's about celebrating life, not cursing death." I leaned back and sat on my ass, not caring about the grass stains for once. I picked at a few weeds, tearing them apart in my hands, tossing them back onto the ground. "For the first time in my life, I can truly say that I'm not exactly up for a fiesta right now." He paused his shovel and turned to face me, resting his chin on the wide handle. "Diego," embroidered on the right breast of his faded coveralls. "Grief is normal, but you can't let it consume you." Diego pointed off into the distance, where just over the cracked sidewalk that ran through the middle of the cemetery, a middle-aged woman with short blonde hair wearing a short white dress crouched down over a grave and set down a bundle of blue carnations. "You see her?" he asked. The woman began to openly weep, her shoulders jostling, her eyes shut tightly, her mouth contorting and twisting as she laid down over the grave. The sounds of her sobs were picked up by the wind, spreading her sadness over the already depressing graveyard. "She's here every day at the same time, lays on her husband's grave and cries for hours and hours before she leaves, only to come back and do it all over again the next day. Always wears white like it's her wedding day." "So?" I asked. "I mean, it would be odd as fuck if she were doing it in the middle of the truck pulls or at the bingo hall. But isn't crying kind of an expected thing at this place?" I shielded my eyes from the sudden presence of the sun peeking out from behind the slow-passing clouds as it began to make its final descent for the day. "Her husband died 17 years ago." "Oh," I said. Yeah, exactly. He resumed his shoveling. Once you let yourself get lost in it, there ain't no returning from grief like that. He looked back over to the woman and shook his head. That's why you need to celebrate and remember that you're still alive. He laid his shovel down and reached into a small red cooler. Ice spilled over the sides as he pulled out a six-pack of beer. So what'll it be, son? We celebrating? He jerked his head toward the woman in white. Or are you gonna let someone else's death swallow up what little life you've been given on this earth? Who the fuck are you? I asked, feeling a smile tugging at the corners of my mouth. You're like the fucking Graveyard Tony Robbins or something. He shrugged. Or something. Diego raised the six-pack in the air. Choice is all yours, man. I glanced down at Grace's grave, to my mother's grave, and thought about what she would want for me, and instantly I knew it wouldn't be sadness or tears. She always said she wanted me to be happy, and in that moment, I wanted to do anything and everything that she'd always wanted for me. I jerked my chin up to Diego and held out my hands. What the fuck are you waiting for? His face lit up. A single gold tooth glinted as he underhanded the beer my way. I caught it, but just barely, fumbling with the cold wet cans as they almost slipped free from my grip. Diego Martinez, the groundskeeper said, formally introducing himself as he sat down next to me and held out his hand. Samuel Clearwater, I offered, removing my hand from the beer and wiping it on my already grass-stained pants before shaking the hand of my new alcohol-providing, grave-digging life coach. Diego and I celebrated that night. And by celebrated, I mean that we got shit-faced right there on Grace's grave. Not only did he have beer in that cooler, but he also had a sizable bottle of unmarked tequila that I'm pretty sure he'd made at home in his bathtub because it tasted like pure gasoline. We were halfway through the bottle when the world faded away and I slipped into unconsciousness. The warm rays of the sun woke me the next day and then proceeded to blind me as I opened my eyes just a sliver, letting in only a small amount of the already much too bright light. Ugh, I groaned. My own tongue tasted rancid, my mouth so dry it was as if I gargled with sand throughout the night. I sat up slowly and blinked a few times to better adjust to the assault on my senses. When I was finally able to open my eyes, I discovered what was still in the cemetery, still sitting over Grace's grave, but I was alone. There were no signs of Diego or his evil bottle of moonshine tequila, shovel, cooler, even the canopy he'd wheeled out the day before. The only sign he'd ever been there at all was the lingering hangover and the agony in my brain that felt as if an angry cat was using it as a scratching post. See you later, Grace, I whispered, resting my hand for a beat on her plaque and giving it a few taps before pushing to my feet. I took a few steps, but then my head spun, the graveyard swirling around me. I paused and leaned on a nearby headstone to calm the spinning. After a few seconds, I felt good enough to continue, but when I straightened, it was the name on the headstone I'd leaned on for support that caught my eye. No fucking way, I said out loud as I ran my hand over the name engraved in the stone. Diego Martinez. I rolled my eyes at myself. It's a common fucking name, I explained to myself, which was totally true. In southern Florida, I couldn't swing my cock without hitting at least three Diego Martinez's. Then I read what was written below his name, and I jumped back from it like it had shocked me. Maybe I'd suffered a lot more trauma by the hands of Chop than I'd realized, because I was a few The Sixth Sense moments away from printing out my own one-way ticket to one of those nice and cozy padded rooms with no windows. Diego Martinez, loving father, husband, grandfather, laid to rest in the ground he cared for lovingly for over 30 years. Now watching over his hard work from his place in heaven, we celebrate his life. May 5th, 1944. June 17th, 2016. Delayed long-term brain damage. It was the only explanation for both the hallucinations and the pounding headache.
Preppy?
I loved hearing her say my name. I spun around to find the other person in the world who at times had me thinking I was going crazy. Because there, standing less than 10 feet from me, wearing a strapless yellow sundress that flowed around her knees, was none other than the doc herself, staring at me with a concern etched into her forehead. You by chance didn't see a groundskeeper around here, did you? Gray coveralls, looks like the guy from the Machete movies. She looked around the empty cemetery.
No, should I have seen him?
She asked slowly. Her focus dropped from my face to the grass stains on my jeans.
Are you okay?
I held out my hand with my palm facing her. Hang on, give me a sec, Doc. With my head still thundering, I shut my eyes tightly and then opened them again. Sure enough, Dre was still there. But since I was going crazy and all, I didn't trust my own vision and needed more evidence. I'm going to ask you a question, and I just need you to answer it for me, okay? I took a step forward and Doc flashed me a small, white-toothed smile, doing a shit job of hiding the concern etched into her black corneas.
Okay,
she said hesitantly. Just tell me the truth, Doc. Are you really here right now? I asked, still not believing that my girl was finally home with me. Dre looked down to her feet as if she were checking to see where here was.
Yeah, I mean, I think so.
Just stay right there, I ordered, not wanting to get my hopes up before I had solid evidence. I held out my arms straight, locking my elbows in a very Frankenstein-esque stance. I moved forward slowly and didn't stop until I smelled the lavender of her shampoo and my hands were resting on her shoulders. I squeezed my fingers. Her soft skin was warm and very much alive beneath my touch. You really are here, I whispered, tipping up her chin so I could get a better look at the freckles on her nose.
I'm really here,
she said, as if she really couldn't believe it herself. You're really here, I said again, interrupting her and giving her shoulders another squeeze.
Satisfied?
She asked, her eyes locking onto mine. The air around us grew thick and charged. Suddenly, touching her shoulders wasn't enough. When it came to Dre, it would never be enough. Fuck no, not even close, I admitted, resting my forehead against hers. What time is it? I asked.
It's time. Everyone's starting to show up at the house, even Kevin's coming,
she said, pulling me by the hand. I still wasn't sure if the kid was my brother, but he was enough of a delinquent to definitely give me a reason to believe it was a possibility.
I have to go pick up my dad from the airport, but I'll be back. You sure you want to do this? Meeting the parents is kind of a big deal, you know,
she said, biting on her bright red lip. It is, and I'm totally sorry I can't introduce you to my parents, but I don't know who my real dad is. King killed my stepdad, and my mother is a super cunt.
Duly noted.
I nodded, and she smiled brightly. I held onto her hand and let her lead me through the same cemetery I chased her through years ago. I didn't know where we were going, just that she had something to show me, but I decided that Dre could be dragging me through the gates back to hell, and I wouldn't have cared. I'd follow my wife anywhere.
Oh, I almost forgot. You'll need this,
she said, tossing me something soft. I knew what it was before I opened my hand.
I think it's time,
Dre said. I unfolded my palm and ran my thumb over the pink and yellow plaid of the bow tie in my hand. I smiled. It was definitely fucking time.
Chapter 27. Dre. My father twisted around in the passenger seat, and with his mouth slightly agape, he ran a palm over the supple black leather in one slow, appreciative motion of admiration, like he was inspecting a stud horse.
You sure I can't keep it? I mean, it's not like he'd ever let you drive it. You're a terrible driver. Remember when you ran over Mrs. Stevens' cat?
My dad teased with a wink.
Excuse me?
I asked, raising my voice several octaves in mock offense. If you remember, I'd just gotten my driver's license that week. And not for nothing, but I'll have you know that cat was suicidal.
A suicidal cat? My father asked, cocking an eyebrow. What else would you call it? I lightly smacked the wheel. That cat was mean as hell, and not to mention 100 years old. And what black cat darts out across an unlit road in the middle of the night?
A suicidal one,
my father deadpanned. But his straight face only lasted for a beat before a smile reappeared and he began to laugh, low and loud. It was a sound I hadn't realized how much I'd missed until right then. It had been way too long. So, old man, unless you want me to drive your side of the car into the causeway rails, I suggest you be nice to your daughter about her driving skills, I teased back. And no, you can't keep it, I said, patting the dashboard. You did a great job on her, Dad. He'll love it, and I promise that she'll be in good hands. My father's laughter finally subsided.
I sure hope so, darling.
He'll love her, I assured him again. But when I glanced over to him, I realized that it wasn't just the car he was talking about.
Not as much as I do,
my dad said, his eyes welling up with tears. No, I said, feeling my chest tighten and my throat start to close. No, I repeated, pointing accusingly at him while trying to focus my attention out of the front windshield so I wouldn't miss our turn. You are not allowed to make me cry. This is a happy trip. After finding the road and making the turn, I risked glancing back at my father. We've cried enough tears, haven't we? I asked, sniffing back my own tears. My father cleared his throat.
That we have. That we have.
I turned into the driveway, but instead of parking in front of the garage next to the other cars I'd prearranged with Mr. Ronson a few houses down from the house to use his driveway, so Preppy wouldn't see his surprise before it was time, my stomach flipped, wondering what his response would be. He's not like other guys, I explained to my dad for the 7th time since we've been in the car together. Earlier, Ray and I picked him up at the airport in King's truck, before she dropped both of us at the auto transport center to receive the car and make sure it survived the journey. I had held my breath through the entire inspection, but luckily, she was good to go. I went to grab my dad's bag from the trunk, but he stopped me.
I'm staying with an old friend in town. No need to take that. I'll pull it out when I call for a cab later.
What friend? I asked. He hadn't mentioned a single thing in the weeks leading up to his visit. I'd always just assumed he'd stay with us. He switched the subject and led me away from the car before I could ask him more about this mystery friend.
And don't you worry about what I'm going to think of him. You'll remember that I have spoken with him a couple of times before, so I have a little idea.
You have no fucking idea. Yes, but those weren't good conversations. I don't want you to hate him. It's important to me.
Darling, he said, wrapping his arm around my shoulder and pulling me in close as we made our way over to the gate. I'm your dad.
He lowered his voice to a whisper when we heard the partygoers in the backyard and saw the flame of a bonfire.
It's my duty to hate whoever you choose to love. But...
He flashed me a big smile.
You're not exactly like other young women, so why would I expect you to be with a man like all the others? Have you seen that dating show, The Single Man? Honestly, if that's what the young men of today behave like, then I'm glad you like this man who, how does the saying go? Likes to beat hard on his own drum?
I chuckled at his total failure to say beat of his own drum, but when it came to Preppy... Beat his own drum hard worked just as well. Yeah, Dad, something like that. And I paused and turned to him. Just thank you for everything, I said in an almost whisper. I don't deserve a dad as great as you.
Yes, you do, he argued as we started walking again. You deserve the world. Oh, one more thing.
He said, pointing his finger in the air as the thought came to him. What? I asked. A knee-jerk sense of dread hit me instantly. My dad contorted his face.
Do I have to call him Preppy?
And with that, the dread cleared and we made our way into the party, arm in arm, laughing. I never answered him. Ray and Thea were already sitting around the fire, talking. I introduced my dad to both of them, and then to Billy, who got my dad talking about saltwater fishing in no time. While they chatted, I scanned the front yard for Preppy, who was in the corner talking with King and Bear. Their voices traveled as they all spoke excitedly.
"You were there, damn it!"
Bear yelled, pacing back and forth. Preppy covered his mouth with his hand like he was stifling a laugh.
"You talk to me every single day. You were like my voice of reason or some shit like that."
"Do you know how fucking stupid that sounds, Bear?"
Preppy asked.
"I mean, let's put aside your delusion that you heard me talking inside your big head when you thought I was dead."
He raised his arm above his head and pointed down to himself.
"And let's focus on what the fuck you were smoking that made you think this guy right here could ever be your voice of fucking reason."
Bear tugged at his hair and growled.
"Fuck it, I give up on life, man." "Good call, because seriously, you're sucking at it,"
Preppy said, followed by King's deep, bellowing laugh and a groan from Bear. As if he sensed me looking at him, he turned around. When our eyes met, his smile only grew brighter. He jogged across the yard and lifted me up into his arms.
"I have a surprise for you," I murmured into his ear.
"Anal?"
he shouted the question. The yard grew silent, and the dozen or so partygoers turned their attention to us, including my dad, who cleared his throat.
"Prep?"
I asked. He still hadn't let me down and was snuggling his nose into my hair. "This is my dad," I said. Preppy finally let me go, and in the most preppy move ever, he also seemed to give no shits that he just shouted the word anal in front of my father, who he was meeting for the first time.
"Hi, Mr. Capulet. I'm Samuel Clearwater,"
Preppy announced happily.
"I've thought about this moment a lot, and I wanted you to know that I will take no less than 3 furlongs of land and 7 of your finest milking goats. That's my final offer, sir."
Then, without missing a beat, he ignored my father's still extended hand and wrapped him in a tight hug, without moving me out of the way first. Therefore, I became the meat in a hug sandwich between my 2 favorite men in the entire world. I also couldn't breathe. I'd never been happier.
"Excuse me, son?"
my dad asked after Preppy finally let us go.
"Well, let my dad go."
I was still plastered to his side, his arm around my waist, his fingers dancing on my hip. Still, never happier.
"I thought that's how this whole thing works. First the men negotiate. That's how they do it in the movies. Although we are doing it a little backwards, so I can understand the confusion."
Preppy deadpanned.
"What the fuck kind of movies are you watching?" I asked, not even caring that I just swore in front of my father, who was staring at Preppy as if he just sprouted another head from his neck.
I couldn't not smile up at his craziness.
"Furlongs? Goats?"
Preppy shrugged.
"I don't know, Doc, the kind where farm animals and land are exchanged before shit like this goes down. Maybe it was the Princess Bride?"
he wondered, looking off to the bay for a beat before focusing his smile back on my dad, whose eyebrows were drawn in so tight they made a V down the middle of his forehead so sharp I thought it might slice his face in two.
"Wait, how what shit works?"
my dad asked, using a rare swear word of his own.
"What are we talking about here?"
Preppy released me temporarily to step over to the mismatched coolers on the grass against the back porch. He tossed a beer to my dad, who caught it, and immediately popped the top. Preppy pulled out 2 more, opening both of them before handing one to me.
"Well, I suppose I could settle for 1 less furlong of land. I tell you what, sir, as soon as I figure out how much a furlong of land is, I'll get back to you with my new terms. Sound good?"
Preppy asked, taking a sip of his beer. My father sighed, and I tried my hardest not to laugh, knowing full well what it is like to meet Preppy for the first time.
"Son, you either need to tell me what you're talking about or up your medication, because
I'm an old man, and you've got me spinning in circles over here, and I've only had a sip of beer.
He looked at me.
Do you know what he's talking about?
I shook my head because, honestly, I had no idea. But I knew there was a point. There was always a point. Well, sometimes there was a point. My dad took another swig of his beer, and I did the same, the cool bubbles tickling my tongue and throat. Of course, it just so happens that Preppy waited until my father and myself had a mouthful of beer to explain himself, which resulted in the two of us spraying beer out of our mouths and noses, on ourselves, on each other, and to the delight of others, on everyone within a 3 feet radius.
Doc's dowry, of course, Preppy explained, like we should have already known. You know, for your daughter's hand in marriage.
Am I cattle? I asked.
I don't know. Do you want to be?
Preppy asked, waggling his eyebrows.
I don't even know what that means, I laughed, swatting him on the shoulder.
Ahem, my dad said, shaking his empty beer bottle.
I think I'm going to need another one of these before this conversation goes any further.
Preppy jogged off to get him another one as Beau came crashing into my leg. Max and Sammy had been chasing him around the yard. My father didn't miss a beat.
Is this the famous Beau?
He asked, crouching down. Beau hid behind my leg. He's a little shy, I explained to my father. I reached around to give Beau's hair a rustle. Beau, this is your... I paused, not knowing what my dad wanted to be called. Thankfully, he finished for me. My father waved me off.
Beau, I'm your grandpa. You can call me Grandpa or Papa or...
I gave my dad a stern look to remind him that Beau didn't talk.
You can call me whatever you would like.
Dad took his open hand and held his thumb to his forehead. Beau peered out from behind me. When Dad was sure Beau was looking, he moved his hand away from his face, making two small arches in the air.
That's the hand sign for Grandpa.
My heart melted, and I felt like I was going to cry.
What the heck's wrong with you?
I have something in my eye, I snapped, and my father just laughed. Beau pointed up at me and smiled at his new grandpa. Oh, great, you're making fun of me too, I said, reaching around to tickle him.
I have something for you, Beau, my dad said.
Preppy came around then with my dad's beer in hand. Dad opened his wallet.
But your mom says you're 6 years old, which means I owe you 6 years worth of birthday, Christmas, Easter.
He counted out several bills before taking everything from his wallet and pushing it into Beau's hands. Dad, you don't have to do that, especially since... I started but stopped, not wanting to bring up my dad losing his store and damage his pride.
Especially since what? You can say it, dear.
Dad said, standing up. Preppy knelt and helped a smiling Beau count his money. Especially since you lost your business, I said in a low voice. Dad surprised me by laughing. Preppy picked up Beau and placed him on his shoulders, hanging onto his knees. Beau wrapped his little arms around Preppy's head, covering his eyes with his hands. Preppy lifted them so he could exchange a knowing glance with my father. What's going on here? I asked. What am I missing?
Your dad didn't lose his store, Preppy said.
He didn't? Dad shook his head.
Nope. I was bought out. Some big bookstore made me a more than fair offer, and I jumped on it. They don't even want to take it over. They just paid me to close up and get out of the way. Either way, now that I'm debt-free and my schedule has been cleared up to spend some more time with my beautiful daughter and her new family.
And you knew about this? I asked Preppy, who was leaning to one side as far as he could without Beau falling off.
Maybe,
he said, but it came out like a question. He set Beau down on the grass, and the two of them took off across the yard, chasing one another through the small crowds of people who happily made way for the new father and son.
Us boys, we chatted, Dad said slyly.
When? I asked.
The day you came back from Logan's Beach. And every other day since.
Dad said. He pointed to Preppy, who caught Beau in his arms and was twirling him around, his feet barely missing King and Bear, who jumped back and pretended to have been hit.
That's Samuel. I don't know what to make of him. Frankly, I don't understand half the shit that comes out of his mouth, but I know one thing, and it's the only thing that matters in my book.
What's that?
That he loves you. He looks at you the same way I looked at your mom. But I didn't need to see it to know it. I heard it in his voice long before that.
My dad said, wrapping his arms around my shoulders. I wiped my eyes, sniffing.
No more tears, kid, my dad said with a laugh. This is a time to celebrate.
Wait, I said, realizing something. So between their money and the money from the sale of Myrna's house, you'll be okay then? At least for a while, I mean? My dad nodded and took a swig of his beer.
Kid, your old man will be set until Beau there is ready to go to college. And that's just with the money from the store sale. I never touched the money you put in my account for Myrna's house. I transferred it right back down here into an account in Beau's name. You can use it for his college, or whatever else he'll need growing up. Trust me, kids are expensive,
he said with a smile. Dad gave my shoulder another squeeze.
I'm going to find the little boy's room.
I watched him walk toward the house. I pulled at my imaginary sleeves. Preppy came up beside me and put his hands on his knees. He was out of breath from running around with Beau, who was now happily chasing Max and Sammy around the yard. I pressed my lips together, trying not to laugh.
I'm not out of breath. You're out of breath,
he said, standing upright and pulling me against his chest. He gave me a quick peck on the cheek and was off again, heading toward all three kids making monster noises. Penny for your thoughts? Ray asked, sauntering over with one hand in her back pocket and a beer in the other. My dad. He never used the money from the sale of Myrna's house, I said, still not quite able to believe what he just told me. The money. He put it in an account for Beau. I know, Ray said. I'm happy he did it, but I wish we would have known sooner. Wait, you know? Yeah, I know, she admitted. Sooner when? Like, before you sold the house? Yeah, I agreed, more confused than ever. But, oh well, I guess things happen for a reason. I mean, I can't believe my dad got such a great offer on the store when it was failing so miserably. Whether they only paid him to close it or not, it seems odd that a company would pay so much money for a failing business. It's odd because it never happened. Huh? Ray rocked back on her feet. My dad came out of the house and I officially introduced him to Ray. Mr. Capulet, Dre was just telling me about the sale of your business. Congratulations. Tell me, do you remember the name of the company that bought your store? She asked, chewing on her lip. My dad looked up and twisted his lips.
Let me think. Oh, yeah, now I remember. Bowtied Books.
He pointed to Preppy.
Fitting, isn't it?
He asked, not making the same connection I had. I spit out my beer and Ray chuckled.
You okay?
My dad asked. Yeah, this beer is skunked, that's all. One of the GGs came over to introduce themselves to my dad. Told you so, Ray sang in my ear. And here, these belong to you, she said, tossing me a set of keys that I recognized them instantly by Myrna's green Lucky Rabbit foot keychain. I already signed it back over to both you and Preppy. How? I asked. Ray shrugged. It's a long story. I'll pay you back, No, Ray said, closing my hand around the keys. This is what family does. She looked over to Preppy, who now had Beau on his back, and were chasing King and Sammy while Max shrieked around them, hiding behind Bear's legs.
And like it or not, you're family now. And with that, Ray sauntered over to King and stood on her tiptoes, planting a small kiss on his mouth. He returned her kiss with one of his own that wasn't nearly as PG.
Dre, do you know if there's any wine around?
My dad asked.
Sandra isn't such a big fan of beer.
I smiled at the gray-haired lady my father had his arm linked with. I'm on it. I think there's a bottle of red inside. I ran up the porch, and it only took me a minute to find a bottle of wine which had dust on it. I was trying to find a wine opener when I realized that it was a screw cap. Hopefully Sandra doesn't mind old cheap red, I said to myself. With a beer bottle in hand, I turned around and stopped just short of crashing into Beau, who had a frown on his face where only moments before he was smiling ear to ear.
Hey, Beau, what's the matter?
I asked, crouching down and inspecting him for any play session injuries. He vigorously shook his head from side to side. He looked up at me and his eyes went wide. Sheer terror was written all over his perfect baby face. When I realized it wasn't me he was looking at, but something over my shoulder, it was already too late. I was already too late. A strong hand holding a rag came over my nose and mouth, the other gripping the back of my neck. Before I could even think to fight off whatever or whoever was behind me, my limbs went numb. My brain floated around in my skull. Beau's frightened image turned blurry, and then sideways as I crashed to the floor. My heart broke. Beau was scared, and I couldn't help him. I couldn't protect him. Only a few days in, and I'd already failed him as a mother. As the blackness claimed me, I heard a strangled cry, a beautiful yet painful sound. I drifted off into somewhere unfamiliar, grateful that the last thing I might ever hear was my son's little voice for the very first time, even though he was screaming,
Mommy!
The end, for now. Preppy, The Life and Death of Samuel Clearwater, Part 3, coming soon.
This has been Preppy, The Life and Death of Samuel Clearwater, Part 2, King Series, Book 6. Written by T.M. Fraser. Narrated by Kirsten Lee and Lance Greenfield at Brickshop Audio, Inc. Copyright 2017 by T.M. Fraser. Production copyright 2017 by T.M. Fraser.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.